Greetings and salutations, Cincinnati, and welcome to the Riverfront Red Show. This is episode number 520 of the world's most dangerous podcast, where we discuss, you guessed it, the Cincinnati Reds and occasionally Alex Blandino. I'm your host, Nate Dotson, and with me this week is none other than Joe Farsing. Joe, how the heck are you, my brother?
I'm wearing a Brooklyn Dodgers hat. I'm in the wrong place.
Damn it. That's a dope hat, though.
Sorry about that. Thank you. We actually have Alex Blandino news. That is fantastic and dope, and I'm excited to talk about Alex Blandino this week.
There is somehow almost nothing to talk about and so much to talk about, so I'm excited to get into it this week. We also had another guest scheduled, and he's having some technical difficulties. We're hoping that he pops up back on here in a little bit, but if not, we'll get him on another time. And that is Jeff Trenopole. You know him as the host of Sports with Strawberry Ice. So we will give him the welcome he deserves if he's able to join us today. And if not, then we'll just keep on trucking because we owe it to you, the people.
They pay our salaries.
They do indeed. What, they do?
I'm still waiting for the check, but
okay. Lost in the mail.
It's produce.
Absolutely. All right. But before we go any further, please head on over to YouTube. Give us a like, a follow, a subscribe, either at YouTube or your favorite podcast app or in all the places. We're even on Facebook and that hellscape. Also, if you want to go a little deeper, you can join the family over at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. Man, those folks over there, literally, this thing would not be possible. We have a great time. We got Patreon. We got our viewer mail questions. Those come from our Patreon members. We have a Slack channel that is constantly filled with chatter. We're talking about the Reds. We're talking about the Bengals. We're talking about FC Cincinnati. Joe's trying to get more people to talk about music. We've got books. We've got NBA. We've got gambling. We're just talking. People are talking. So come hang out with us. You can go to that patreon.com/riverfrontcincy or click the link in the show notes. Joe, there was a fun conversation going on. I want to get into this before we start talking about the Red stuff. People were talking about their favorite baseball movies. They were ranking their favorite baseball movies. Now, we had a baseball movie draft on here, me, you, and Tim, and Carlos. But we didn't talk about what our favorites were. The draft had a different format. So what would you say your favorite baseball movie is?
Because I am a gooey, sappy, sentimental guy. Well, not really. But when it comes to baseball, I am.
I've always said that about you.
Yeah, I'm very gooey. I'm especially around the midsection. it's Field of Dreams. It hits all of the poignant, sentimental points. As I've gotten older, I identify a lot with Ray Kinsella, like having a strained relationship with your dad, never getting to really have them see you eye to eye before they pass away, and then just the end, him asking his dad to have a catch. It's absolute waterworks, and they get bigger and bigger every single time I watch that movie. So it's got to be definitely Field of Dreams.
Yeah, I mean, that's always a good pick. I understand when people don't rank it number one. It's not my favorite. But I do have a hard time with the people that just don't like it at all. If you love baseball and don't like that movie, you're just shocked.
You're wrong.
Yeah, it shocks me. My favorite, I would probably have to go with The Sandlot. You know, I was
number two.
Just a baseball-obsessed child. And every kid wanted to be Benny the Jet Rodriguez. Still quoted all the time now. You're Killing Me Smalls is dropped at least once a day in this household. What else is up there?
I wanted to be Squints because Wendy Peppercorn.
Well, fair enough. First crush for sure. Wendy Peppercorn and Kelly Kapowski.
She just turned 50, by the way. Kelly Kapowski, Tiffany Amber Thiessen.
Still a lovely lady.
Absolutely.
Some other nominees I would go with. My number two is probably Little Big League.
Yes.
I love Little Big League. I don't know why. It's probably the one I've watched the most outside of Sandlot. That was just, as a kid, I wanted to be that.
It was so much better than Rookie of the Year, too.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
It's funny seeing, again, Rookie of the Year or Little Big League, seeing Tim Busfield as the slugging first baseman, but then seeing him just kind of like the jackass brother-in-law in Field of Dreams.
Yeah.
And like that, those are good double feature movies right there. I love Little Big League. First up, the cameos, the baseball in it. The baseball is probably the best baseball action
I think of any movie. Easily. I think for sure it's the best. They got some real athletes in there. And outside of like one pitcher. Like, everybody looks like they know what they're doing.
Jonathan Silverman? If you haven't
seen it, that's it. Yeah. No shade on Jonathan Silverman. Just, you know, I mean, the Reds tried out Ian Jabeau and Derek Law, so what do I know?
there's a former Reds pitcher in the movie.
And we talked about, that's true. And we talked about this in the Slack channel, but if you haven't seen it yet, go out and watch Everybody Wants Some. It is the spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused from my brain just stopped. Yeah, Richard Linklater. And it's a college baseball movie. They got Glenn Powell as one of the main guys in it, the most handsome guy on the planet right now. But anyway, Reds, that's why we're here. Go watch baseball movies. It's fun.
Yes.
Some news around the league. I guess we can get to real quick. The Hall of Fame. The inductees got announced. It looks like Joe Mauer, Adrian Beltre, and Todd Helton got in. Do you agree or disagree with those three getting in? Let's start there.
Yeah, those three are absolute, I don't say no doubt, because what's a no doubt Hall of Famer when you have Harold Baines, for God's sake, but those three deserve it. It's well done by the voters. Mauer only getting 76% is dumb. There's 24 or 23.9% of the people that, what the hell are you doing? But
yeah, maybe there's a longevity question with Joe Mauer, but 15 years, that's a long career. That's a good career.
Yeah.
And he was so important to that position. His case, I think, stands out more than just any baseball reference page is going to tell you.
Yeah.
Huge fan of that. I think that you could quibble with Todd Helton. I don't, but I can see the argument for it just because his splits, you know, the non-Coors Field numbers were decidedly good. But they weren't
great.
Elite. Yeah. But for me, he was a major, major figure for my generation of baseball fan. And the Hall of Fame is a museum. So I think that those guys deserve to get in. Like, everybody who follow baseball that's from 35 to 45 love Todd Helton. I love watching him swing the bat. So I support that. Is there anybody that didn't get in that you think should?
Anybody or buddies? Because there's a bunch that should be in that aren't. And it's funny because the person who finished with the next highest, the closest without getting Billy Wagner, would be near the bottom. I struggle when it comes to relievers getting in. They deserve it, but I'd rather position players and starting pitchers get in first because they more innings, more at bats, like you have more of an impact. But Gary Sheffield's last year on the ballot was looking like he was close with the ballots that were announced. Apparently, nobody voted for him who didn't release their ballot. Because he finished at 63.9, so he's now off.
Yeah, he's done.
He deserves it. Andrew Jones, he deserves to be there. You've got all the Roy and PED guys that absolutely deserve to be in that aren't in.
Well, we agree on that.
I'm a big Hall guy. There's a lot of guys that, I mean, even David Wright, I didn't realize he played long enough. I thought he only played 7-8 years, but he played long enough, and he was amazing when he played there, and he's got enough votes to stay on the ballot next year, but only 6.2%. So he's close to falling off.
David Wright, for me, is the Hall of Very Good guy. I wouldn't say I'm a small Hall guy or a big Hall guy. I just, you know, think that it needs to be a nuanced discussion every year. Like, if somebody submitted a ballot with no names checked, I can defend that if they genuinely did not think anybody deserved it. But I think that you mentioned Andrew Jones, and he's the one that I think should be on there the most. I mean, he's well above average offensive numbers in a long career, but he's the greatest defensive center fielder of my generation. He revolutionized 100%. The position, in my opinion. And I think that if you're telling the story of baseball, it's always my argument with Pete Rose. Well, I think he should be in the Hall despite being a terrible person. Not that Andrew Jones is a terrible person, but if you're telling the story of baseball, it's hard not to mention Andrew Jones. I do think that Billy Wagner should be in, and I've changed my opinion on relievers in the Hall of Fame. Over the last several years, I used to be more aligned with what you're saying. But I think now the way that the relief pitcher is utilized in the game, it's such an important cog. And it's only going to get more so with pitchers not going 9 innings anymore and rarely starters rarely going 200 innings in a season. So these guys are more important by the year. And Billy Wagner was sort of at the forefront. He was in that early group of just lockdown saves matter kind of reliever. Now there's a strong argument that saves shouldn't matter, but he's also a local kid from Tazewell, Virginia, so you gotta love that. And a great story. The guy threw right-handed until he broke his arm, said for the second time. I said, screw this. I'm throwing the other one. And he will probably, he's got 1 year left on the ballot, and the players typically get a little bit of a bump on their last year. So I would like to see him get in, but we'll see.
I don't think it would be the worst thing that would ever happen if he got in. His Baseball Reference has him at 27.7 career WAR. I don't know. It's, again, he was a dominant, absolute lockdown. I mean, God, how many saves did he get against the Reds when he was with Houston? I swear he saved every Royals ball start. Mm-hmm. Royals ball did not lose against the Reds for a very, very long time. So as a, you know, fan of a former rival team, yeah, he was fantastic. But
yeah, I think there's a solid argument to be made either way. What else happened? Brandon Phillips got a vote.
One vote.
He did not get enough votes to stay on the ballot. So good try. I would love to know who voted for him. I hope that comes out eventually. I think it was
C-Trent. I would guess not, but it would be funny if he did.
They had a great, maybe that's his way of getting back in his good graces. Who knows? All right. The Reds popped up in the baseball world a little bit, though not for transactions as maybe we would have hoped. But the first time I saw him this week was Eno Saris came out with an article on The Athletic. And Eno's awesome, man.
Yeah.
If you don't follow Eno on Twitter or read his stuff, you should. I don't know if he came up with it or if he's just the biggest proponent of this Stuff Plus metric, where he just found a different way to quantify how effective pitchers' repertoires are. And he came out with an article, and he was just, it's like more like a mailbag. And people asked him about the Reds' core. The direct question was, what are your expectations this year for the Reds' young starters, Hunter Green, Graham Ashcraft, and Andrew Abbott? And I thought it was pretty interesting. He was really, really high on Hunter Green. Sort of could be really high on Graham Ashcraft. We'll see. Both those guys, he said, didn't need to develop a third pitch. I'm not exactly breaking news, but his exact quote for Andrew Abbott was that Andrew Abbott confounds me. He says his pitch movements are almost all average, but he strikes guys out. He also brought up that over his last 40-something innings pitch last year, he had a over 6 ERA. So I guess this is just a long-winded way of me asking you, how do you feel about Eno's assessment? Do you agree, disagree, or do you fall?
It's hard to disagree with someone as knowledgeable about what they're doing with Eno. The quote that Andrew Abbott had is, I don't know why I'm such a strikeout pitcher, but I guess location and execution, he doesn't even know how he strikes out batters. I'd say it's a lot more has to do with how he can, his delivery, the ball's hidden until at the absolute moment of release, but it's very fair. Hunter Green rates really high in Stuff Plus for him, and yeah, if he can develop, apparently, the changeup was supposedly pretty good at some point for Hunter that needs to bring it back. Ashcraft, I think, is much more important for him to develop that third pitch because with his lack of consistency, we don't even know what the baseline is with the stuff that that Graham Ashcraft really has. I mean, he's either great or he's terrible. Like, it's a roller coaster. Hunter's kind of created a little bit of a baseline of what you can expect from him. I mean, he's still going to get blown up, you know, every now and again because he's a young pitcher, but very fair and very good information in that article. So,
I'm so excited about these three specific pitchers. I think that with Nick Lodolo, we're just praying for health with, the Frankie Montases of the world. We'll see. These guys are just coming off injuries, long injuries. So we're going to, just be very, very cautious with any expectations for those two. But the ability for this team, something that we were talking about again in the Slack channel today, the ability to this team to not just make the playoffs, but go deep in the playoffs, relies on either Hunter Green or Frankie Montas, in my opinion, having number one or two type starter season. Frankie Montas has done it before. Hunter Green never has. But as Eno says, the potential's there. The stuff is there. And he even talks about how those guys, Green and Ashcraft, don't need that third pitch to be very good. It just needs to be there. It needs to be a threat. It needs to keep hitters off balance so they can get to that third time in the order. I am so, so interested to see what happens with Graham Ashcraft this year. I loved that interview that you did with Strawberry Ice a few weeks back, because you mentioned how you never know what you're going to get. Well, you kind of do, because he was awesome, absolutely lights out for a long time, and then he was absolute garbage for a long time, and then he was awesome again. And in those three spans, there was never a start like sprinkled in between where he was like really good five times but bad once, or he was bad for a six start stretch but good once. No, it was just either good or bad for a long time. So if he can find some sort of consistency, and I don't know where that lands. I don't know if it lands closer to how awesome he was in the first and third parts of the season or that middle third where he was terrible. I hope it's obviously closer to the bookends, but I am so pumped to see. And we all know, anybody listens to this show regularly knows Graham Ashcraft is my guy.
Yeah. It's funny. We talk about Nick Kroll's peaks and valleys. He doesn't have peaks and valleys. He has like plateaus and lowlands. Because it's a long stretch to where he's up here and it's just flat, and then it's precipitous drop, like Wile E. Coyote falling off the cliff, and then it's flat plateau, not even any road bumps or any hills or speed bumps or anything like that. It's weird. I've been saying it since the jump. I think his future is in the pen, and I think he can absolutely be a lockdown. I think he can be a high leverage, very valuable reliever. But I'm happy to be wrong. I mean, it's rare, but it does happen from time to time. I mean, he's shown he can get major league hitters up. For me, the key for him is strikeouts. For someone who throws as hard as he does and who has his stuff is rated highly, he does not get a lot of strikeouts. I think that is the key. If he can mix in more strikeouts and just keep the ball out of play, especially if the Reds aren't expected to have a good defense again this year, especially in the outfield, if he can figure out how to put guys away, then he can make the jump and be a mid-rotation guy, which is fine. The Reds can use another number three. They have five of them as it is.
So we're between 5 and 7. Yeah, I agree. I'm a little bit higher in Ashcraft than the most people are, but I think the Reds need that workhorse that he can be, and he's going to be really important this season.
He's a horse. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, sticking with the Athletic.
Dude, awesome.
Yeah, he seemed like a righteous guy. Sticking with the Athletic, our good friend Leather Pants sent out his list of winners and losers in the offseason. Jim Bowden, former Reds general manager, person who somehow gets to keep giving his opinion online despite – it always blows my mind. These head coaches and general managers who are just horrible at their job. And like, we should all listen to them. But they definitely know more than you and I do, so that's why they get the job. He put the Reds amongst his winners of the offseason in his winners and losers column. Do you agree?
Yes. I don't know. I would probably grade the Reds offseason as a B, almost an incomplete, but a B if I had to give them a grade. But they had, you know, as the number 7th best winner in terms of like, these are teams, players, agents, et cetera. But I like every move they made in a vacuum. Again, I still think there's more. We still have a few more weeks before pitchers and catchers report, 3 weeks from this past Wednesday. I still think there's a move to be made. It is still a weird square peg into a round hole roster that I think that something will be done between now and then.
Yeah, I also have them as winners, but they could win again if they make that move. For me, it's just more the NL Central hasn't done a ton.
No.
And it's the NL Mid for a reason. And that the fact that the Reds did the most in the NL Mid, that positions them well to get back to the playoffs. And let's be honest, I harp on that all the time here. I know you should go for it. If you got a chance, you should try to win it all. And I agree with that. But I'll be pretty pumped if they just make the playoffs.
Yeah.
That just doesn't happen very often. So
meaningful games in October. Bring it on.
Yeah. Leather Pants, we agree. The Reds were winners. But they need to win some more. Jonathan India, we're still awaiting his arbitration resolution today. We're recording this on the 25th. So tomorrow will be the first day that they can have that arbitration hearing. And it could go between now and February 16th. So stay tuned for that. Definitely interested to see how that comes out, because Jonathan India popped up again. David Bell had some words. He said things to the media this week, and he sort of confirmed what we all believed, that Jonathan India is his, I'm going to paraphrase a little bit, but he said if he wants to play as much as he wants to play, as much as we want him to play, he's going to have to play more than just second base. So, I mean, I don't know. Any thoughts on how that's going to look?
Bad defensively.
He could be a perfectly fine defensive first baseman.
Yeah.
Then it's going to be bad offensively.
Yeah. With him not playing second, again, I come across really negative and really down on India. And I'm not. I like India. I think he's a perfectly useful ball player. I don't know if he's going to be okay with the role that is best for the team, with him being just a, I don't say part-time player, because he can still get five starts a week and everyone can still get plenty of, everyone can still get 500 plate appearances. But I don't know what the best fit is for him, for the team, for everybody involved, outside of McLean or someone else playing at the Keystone. So we'll see how it works out. Again, I'm not convinced that this is the roster that's going to show up the week of the 14th in Goodyear. So,
yeah. Part of the article was David Bell kind of saying that Jonathan, you know, they've had the conversation. Like he understands and accepts this role. He kind of implied that he wants to be the everyday second baseman, but David Bell was, you know, somewhat frank. This is not how it's going to work. Also, congratulations to Jonathan India. Probably should have let off with this. He is a father now, and I imagine that has a way of changing someone's outlook. Also saw some video of him hitting the cages with the Castellanos crew. So they're probably just talking about, you know, how to play Gold Glove caliber defense and how to hit a great American ballpark. So I hope they had fun. But seriously, congratulations, Jonathan India. We'll see how that plays out. I am very interested to see how that arbitration hearing gets settled. Just because I'm curious.
Do you think, I mean, and people are trying to make a deal out of it, do you think that it's going to cause any lingering? I mean, arbitration has been around for years, and people are like, well, this is going to cause a bigger wedge. Arbitration happens. Like, the Reds used to go to arbitration a lot. Now they rarely do, because you don't want to have to badmouth the player that, you know, that you want on your team, yeah. But it's the way that it goes.
For every Corbin Burns scenario, you have hundreds that are just, they're over once they're over. And I expect this to be the same way.
Everyone's an adult.
Yeah. So there's going to be some hurt feelings. Did you listen to the part one and two Lucas Sims interviews on Locked On Reds?
I have not. It's on in my queue of what to, of taking a listen, but I haven't gotten to them yet.
Yeah. Steve and Jeff over there at Locked On did a great job. They had a sit down with Lucas Sims, and he talked about his walk through the arbitration process. He also talked about the rain and sleet game where he kept throwing the balls back, which is hysterical. Highly recommend giving that a shout out, giving that a listen. But he said, yeah, it was one of those things that really, really stunk in the moment. But if you have the right mental makeup, then you it's like a gut check. Like, hey, maybe exactly how I feel isn't the only thought, the only line of thinking on this, and I can go and get better and do these things and work harder as a result. So that's what you hope comes of it.
Absolutely.
But speaking of relief pitchers, there's another one in the system that I don't think anybody expected when the news dropped that your Cincinnati Reds signed this guy to a minor league deal back in November, brought him back into the fold, young Alex Blandino, a little journeyman utility man, is going to be a knuckleballer? Joe, I know you got some thoughts on this.
Absolutely so excited. knuckleballers, they're not impractical, but they're unicorns, and they're so fun because catchers absolutely hate knuckleballers. I have no idea. Like, is Luke Maley going to be stuck? Like,
I can't wait to see you railing. You're going to rail on Tyler Stephens's pitch framing when Alex Blandino's throwing him knuckleballs. I can't wait for it. It's going to drive me crazy.
There is Pitching Ninja. Rob Freedom on Pitching Ninja keeps showing, since this news came out, Blandino threw some knuckleballs when he came in and pitched for the Reds in mop-up duty. And like the perfect knuckleball, the seam does not move from release point to the catcher's mitt. And him doing that as a starting pitcher, probably in starting in Chattanooga is my guess.
Yeah, they came out and said that.
Okay, you have a lot of batters who have never seen a knuckleball, and they're still gearing up to try to hit a fastball by pitchers who have no idea where the hell it's going to go.
Listen, knuckleballers have always been rare, and they're even more rare now.
And Blandino can throw 90. Like, he threw 90 off the mound when he came in to pitch.
That's what I was going to bring up.
Like, I know Dickey would throw an actual fastball in from time to time just to throw off their timing. And Blandino's going to be throwing these knuckleballs, like, absolute zero spin. Like, I want to see the actual... I don't think I've ever seen any of the pitch tracks info from a knuckleballer. It's been so long, and I'm sure there is some, but I want to see the actual RPMs on them. Because, like, the lowest spin pitches you see right now are, like, a splitters that are, like, 800 RPM. This is going to be 8.
I hope he just breaks Eno's models.
How do you do stuff plus for knuckleballs?
I don't know.
Him backing that up with a low 90s fastball. Because if he could throw 90 as an infielder coming in to throw, you know he can crank it up higher if he's actually working off the mound to be a pitcher. So this will be fun as hell. I hope. God, I hope it's successful. Do you remember Jared Fernandez? Reds had him early, mid-2000s. He threw like an 80-mile-an-hour knuckleball. Like, that was his pitch. Usually knuckleballs are like 60. His came in at 80.
Jeez.
Absolutely.
Maybe Alex, we'll see if Alex can this. Dial it up like that. But yeah, he did not get an invite to Major League Spring Training. Probably just going to let him hang out and figure that out for a while. I have no clue. No clue whatsoever what to expect, but it is a fun story, and we are going to be rooting for it. Knuckleballs and bat flips, 2024.
I've been waiting print so long. T-shirt. It's been a long time since I pulled so hard for a story.
Journeyman utility man.
Exactly. Anthony Ghost, you know, whatever. Like he threw, like he was a hard thrower. No, give me the knuckleballer. I think every pitcher who starts to flame out should work on it. Should try throwing a knuckleball.
I think every major league player that starts to flame out, like Alex Blandino did.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not quite good enough to stay on the offensive side of things. Let's just go the complete opposite direction. I love it. Rooting for you, Alex.
Absolutely.
Can't wait to have you on here to talk about it. We're going to find out if he's a fan of the show. C. Trent, our boy C. Trent, known Brandon Phillips Hall of Fame voter. It is a fact. We are reporting that live. He dropped his first round of roster projections for the Reds. Did you get a chance to look at those?
Yeah.
Anything that jumped out at you?
Yeah. The rotation. He's got Nick Martinez in as a reliever, which is probably fair.
I think so.
He's making a decent chunk of change for someone who's going to go in. But the only reason I can see him actually starting the season in the rotation, I don't think we really know where Nick Lodolo is. In terms of rehab, it's. I'm going with the assumption that he's going to be held back and do an extended spring training or something, and just, you know, maybe coming back in somewhere in mid-April, just working innings up. Just unfortunately, the history of the guy with injuries, and Nick Martinez will start in the rotation. But
yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I had that pegged too for the rotation. There really wasn't any surprises if Nick Lodolo is healthy, but Nick Lodolo is so good. Like, we kind of forget a little bit. A lot of people want to put him in the bullpen. We forget how awesome he was in his limited time before those injuries. Nick Lodolo is a guy. He's a dude.
Yeah.
How do you think that they're going to limit his innings? Because there's no way, even if he's healthy, that he's going to be stretched out enough for a full season's workload. So do you think they're going to do it in the front end and hope to have him for a playoff run? Or do you think that they could just give him some space here and there, go with 6 starters sometimes, phantom IL stint in the middle. Uh-oh, hold on a second. We have a guest.
We do.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Jeff, welcome to the Riverfront. We teased it early in the episode that, we might have a special guest joining. Guys, it's my pleasure to welcome Jeff Turnipole. You know him as Strawberry Ice, the host of – okay, maybe it's almost as good as ours. Maybe it's slightly better. I don't know. But Sports with Strawberry Ice, a fantastic show that everybody needs to go check out, covering all things Cincinnati sports. Jeff, welcome. How are you?
So
issues at work, so I had to go get everything figured out.
Well, we are glad to have you, my man. I'm glad it got figured out. We are jumping into the Reds roster projections from C. Trent Rosecrans, and I don't know if you looked into those at all, but we talked about this a little bit when I was on your show a few weeks back. How do you see Nick Lodolo's 2024 season playing out?
Hopefully healthy. That's the biggest thing. Yeah. I mean, if he's healthy, he's your number two, maybe number one starter. If, you know, if he pitches like he's shown potential to pitch, it all comes down to health for him. I think he's proven, but he's shown that he can pitch in the major leagues and he can do it dominantly. I mean, he did it against Atlanta, did it against Philadelphia. It's just a matter of staying healthy. So that's the biggest thing for me. And that goes with all the young stars, you know, Hunter Green, Lodolo, Abbott. Well, Abbott stayed healthy, but, you know, he pitched many innings. That it comes down to health. It's the biggest thing for him.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I'm so bullish on this team. We talked about it in the starting rotation episode, comparing the NL Central teams. It's just, the depth is ridiculous. Because you got Nick Martinez, who would be a number four or five starter on probably 16 or 17 teams.
Yep.
And the Reds have him as injury protection, doubleheader depth. And while they've got Brandon Williamson just chilling in AAA, staying stretched out, still going to get 15 starts probably. Connor Phillips, who came down and he showed some flashes last year that were just, he can be a guy.
Yeah, I think Brandon Williams is definitely going to be in AAA as long as everybody's healthy. Because I don't want him in the bullpen. I want him, like you said, I want him stretched out and starting every fifth day.
I'm okay with him in the bullpen for a playoff run.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Sign me up for that. Heck yeah.
But in the meantime, and kind of what we're talking about with Lodolo here, like who knows how many innings he's going to be able to pitch. And seeing how the Reds figure that out with minds much smarter than ours is going to be a fun little subplot to the season. Well, much smarter than mine and Joe's. I can't speak to you, Jeff, but definitely smarter than me and Joe.
Oh, definitely smarter than me. That's for sure. I mean, that's the cool thing about what they have done with the pitchers they have signed. It is depth because we didn't have that last year. I mean,
opposite.
If we had any kind of health on our starting pitching staff, we're making the playoffs. We missed the wild card by like two games. I mean, we're making it. So that's where I like the guys they signed. I wish we would have went out and got a number one guy, but I like what they've done because of the depth.
100%. So the no real surprises there. The bullpen, we'll save that for the little discussion we're going to have a little bit later. There is some interesting conversations about how C. Trent sees that playing out.
Right.
Catcher's no big deal. It's all people just vying for opportunities to catch Alex Blandino's knuckleball. Joe, did anything surprise you with his infield projections?
I don't think so on the infield. It's crowded as it is. I mean, he does have India listed as an infielder, and he's going to be I guess he's going to kind of take the role that Spencer Steer had last year outside of playing third base. But outside of that, infield, no, it's pretty much chalk of what you'd figure with Candelario, India, De La Cruz, Marte, McLean, and Encarnacion Strain. None of the guys starting at Triple A, like someone had, I can't remember what writer, it might have been, it's either Sheldon or someone for Fish Rap at the Inquirer saying that some of those guys might start in the minors.
It was Gordo. It was your boy Gordo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. People said Marte's going to start in the minors. They're crazier than hell. That's the big. I mean, dude's on a 15-game hitting streak, I think, to end the season or something like that. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, if you count the Dominican Winter League, I think it's up to like 30 now. I am high on this guy. If he does, we riot.
Bold prediction, he's going to be the NL Rookie of the Year. I don't even know if that's a bold prediction. I mean, he's got a pretty good shot at that.
We are aligned on that one.
Yeah, the only detriment in his way is if Ellie De La Cruz throws another ball at his face. While we are there, that was the day of our live show. Have our awesome
500th episode. That's right.
500th episode. Live show down the street. We all go to the game afterwards. All of a sudden, we see Alejo Lopez in the lineup for a very brief time.
His last appearance in a Reds uniform.
Probably. Yeah, I remember that was the day Nate drug me up on stage with you guys. I was getting ready
to tell that story. That was the first time I met Jeff. We're at the live show. We have people from, you know, obviously this show, Joe, we want to have Greg be in car trouble talking Bengals, talking Cincinnati sports. And there's a Bengals conversation going on. And I realized I just wasn't qualified to have this conversation. And I see Jeff there supporting us. And it just seemed like the right time to throw him into the weeds.
I literally met Nate personally like 5 minutes before this. Hey, come on up on a live show. I'm like, all right, I'm down. Let's go.
I was floundering. I needed your help, and I appreciate it.
Anytime, buddy. Anytime.
The only other thing, I guess, leading into the outfield conversation is that Spencer Steer, listed as an outfielder, I think we all understand that he's going to be pretty much the everyday left fielder. As much as anyone is going to be in an everyday position in this lineup, I am on team positional versatility. I think that we're going to see different lineups every single game. But he did not mention, Joe mentioned earlier, Jonathan India in the outfield. He didn't mention CES. I'm not going to lie to you. Almost nobody is mentioning CES in the outfield, but I'm going to keep banging that drum. If he hits the way that I think he's going to hit, I don't care how bad his defense is.
You got to get in the lineup.
I mean, honestly, he's getting 500 plate appearances.
Yeah, this lineup is almost David Bell proof.
Yeah,
100%. He can mix and match, and I don't think he can mess it up. So, you know, my concern is just outfield defense. I think Steers will be fine. TJ Frito's fine. It's right field. I am not looking forward to seeing Jonathan India out in the outfield. He probably left and put Sear in right or CES. But hey, you gotta get CES bat in the lineup. Like you said, that's a 40 home run bat potentially.
Do you ever try to throw a ball with your offhand?
Yes.
That's how I pictured Jonathan India in left field.
Johnny Damon.
That reminds me. I'm gonna age myself. Remember and see the In Living Color skit with the men on trying to throw a baseball.
Allen Greer and Damon Wayans. Okay,
yeah.
Man, if I ever wish if we had a producer that could put that clip in there for that, that'd be awesome. One thing worth noting with that outfield is that he did not have Jose Barrero making the team. Which is only interesting because he's out of options.
He's out of options, yeah.
That will mean that his time is out. It's going to be a big spring training for Jose Barrero because if he comes out and hits really well, then I think he makes the team because I think Stuart Fairchild still has an option left. Mm-hmm. And he can play outfield and infield. I'm rooting for that guy. He just looks like a ball player to me. Unfortunately, he's never performed.
Oh, they screwed him by bringing him up in 2020. They set him back. He was not ready to come up in 2020. I just think that has completely set him back. He has not been able to perform. Because, I mean, at one time, guys, he was our number one prospect. You know?
Yeah. I guess the question is what was more of a one-hit wonder, a flash in the pan? Was it the season that got him to those prospect rankings or – what we've seen since, and I hope it's the former or the latter. But
I would say the Punisher. That was definitely a one
former. Yeah, well, he only had one hit this last
season
in Cincinnati.
He hit 1 month.
Yeah, so he had Stuart Fairchild, C-Tran, and Stuart Fairchild getting that last outfield position. Whatever, give me one or the other. They're both placeholders until somebody better comes up.
I think that there's a non-zero chance that Blake Dunn gets that last spot over Stuart Fairchild.
Well, this seems like the perfect segue. Joe, you're a professional. You've been doing this for a while. You know, the Reds announced their minor league players of the year a couple days ago. And who is the player of the year? Your boy, Blake Dunn. I think go ahead.
I was just saying, if he hits, he's making this team. They will put him on the team, and I don't know if he's going to hit or not, but that's the thing. If he hits, yeah, he's on this team.
Go ahead, there Joe. Is a conversation about him and Joe, another guy you're a big fan of, Jacob Herdebeast.
Yeah, that was my surprise pick, and when we had the organizational draft with Jacob Herdebeast, they're both older prospects. They're both mid-20s. Dunn was a little more just issues with. The COVID year 2020, and we're talking about Barrero. I don't think he was screwed because he came up in 2020. He was screwed because he was a big prospect coming into 2020 and lost that year of development. I think a lot of players that got stunned at development because of that year, and for whatever reason, you can say it was, you know, maybe he shouldn't have faced major league pitching. I think just not being able to face any peer pitching is what kind of cost these guys. But Blake Dunn can play out, can play defense. He can hit. I really think, again, he's not. I think he's going to be TJ Friedel ish. Same with Herdebezi for that reason. Not a ton of power, but they're going to both have enough pop to stay in the lineup and just be useful players. I mean, we're not talking Mike Trout, but we're talking someone who can be put in and get 200-300 at bats and not embarrass themselves.
Yeah, well, let's talk about some stats real quick. We said Blake Dunn won the organizational player of the year, or minor league player of the year. He hit, his slash line was .312 batting average, .425 on base percentage, and a .947 OPS, which is good for a 480 something slugging percentage, whatever it is. He also had 54 stolen bases. So the guy runs.
Yeah.
You love to see that. Jacob. Good. Yeah, Jacob Herdebezi. He was the position player of the year. Again, 45 stolen bases, .330 average, and a .479 on base percentage.
That'll
so, was interesting about both these guys is Blake Dunn had never had more than 4 home runs in the minors until he hit 20 something last year. 23 last year, which is pretty crazy.
His man's body. He's growing into his man's body.
I hope he keeps growing into it because we could use that little bit of pop.
Right.
And then Jacob Herdebezi, however you say it, he had never had a home run until the last at bat of the 2022 season, or the last game or last at bat, one of those two. He had literally never hit a home run his entire life. I called his mom. She told me in T-ball, no home runs. A couple little league home runs because he's fast. But he hit 7 last year. 7's not much. We're not going to pretend he's a power hitter, but
they're none.
maybe they're teaching him a little bit of something. And then the last little bit of news there is that the minor league pitcher of the year was Julian Aguiar. Played at the same high school as Spencer Steer. Fun fact for you. I don't know a ton about this guy other than that it seems like the Reds handled all of their pitching prospects with kids' gloves last year. But they let this guy ramp up to 125 innings, and he had a 2.95 ERA at two different levels, 1.1 whip, which is one of my favorite stats. He's not getting people on base. So just a little more of that organizational depth that we know and love. Anything else you guys want to throw out about those guys?
I've seen a lot of people have Aguiar listed as a major sleeper prospect. We are known prospect huggers here at the Riverfront, especially our friend and occasional guest, Carlos Guevara. I think Dunn and Herdebezi are both going to see a decent amount of time in the majors this year. Aguiar, we'll see. But again, people who know more than I do, which there are a couple, think that he's got a pretty bright future. You live on the west side of town, not that far off. If you had any common sense, you'd be on this side of 75.
Sad.
I love it. Yeah, people are high on those guys. And, you know, one of the things that I have loved about this Reds offseason wasn't that they moved their, you know, 90th percentile needle very far, but they lifted that floor so high.
Absolutely.
So when you're talking about Blake Dunn's and the Jacob Herdebezi's, maybe they never become all-stars. But if they become the guys replacing Kevin Newman, replacing Stuart Fairchild, and just lifting that floor a little bit more, then you suddenly have a ridiculously deep team, which is why I'm so bullish on this season.
And that's the thing. We don't need them to be, you know, superstars. We already got them. You know,
we got like guys that we think,
Right. We think that they will be. And that's the thing is, if you can get that depth, and if those guys come through, we're just talking about the depth of the pitching we have. Now you're talking about the depth of the bench and minor leagues and all that stuff. I mean, guys, that's what wins championships. The deepest teams who can go through 152 game season and freaking come through because you got injuries and everything else, and you can still make it and stay on top. Those are the ones that win. You got to have depth. I mean, that's on all aspects of your team.
Yeah, I wish I had the stat in front of me, but was it the last 2 years? The last wild card team made it to the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
And a Walker team has won it several times. Like, you just got to get there.
Yeah.
And but I think the Reds too, have.
As I was put this way, is the wild card teams like they're in playoff mode that last month. You know, the ones that are ahead, you know, they sometimes, it's not every time, but sometimes they can kind of coast. That's why I think the wild card teams, I won't say have an advantage, but it helps them, I think, going, especially in these short series. You get on a roll, you're a hot team, you know, you're a 3 or 4 game series, you can get it over with quickly. And that's what kind of happens sometimes with you want to be the hot team. Is that, and that's one thing about Major League Baseball playoffs, it's not usually the best team, it's the hottest team that wins these things.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think that momentum does matter in such a long season.
Yeah, if it were just the best team, then the Dodgers would have several World Series and wouldn't have spent $1 billion on in free agents this past offseason. So,
exactly.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into a bullpen discussion a little bit. As a lead into that, it's worth noting that some moves were made around the NL Central. The Brewers signed Rhys Hoskins? I don't know if I've ever heard that pronounced out loud. Rhys Hoskins. I don't love that for the Reds. I was a big fan of how bad their lineup looked, and he is a legit middle of the order kind of bat. So good signing for them, bad signing for the Reds. But we'll talk about that later. The Pittsburgh Pirates signed a guy. I don't know if y'all have heard of him, but his name is Aroldis Chapman.
I might have heard of him a little bit, maybe.
And he is now going to be Arnold.
Arnold Chapman.
He's hey Arnold Chapman.
I was gonna say, is that Arnold from Happy Days? Is that his?
There you go again, calling me old, and you're quoting old TV shows. Like, what were you like two when that came out? Like,
just negative years old, Chief. That came out in the 70s.
But it ended in 1984. You were alive then.
Okay.
Joe.
I would like to give us credit for waiting 47 minutes to go off the rails.
That's what happens when I show up. See, you're nice and cool until I
show up. The more off the rails, the better. The Pirates signed Aroldis Chapman to a 1-year deal. Would have loved to have seen the Reds do that. I have no idea whether they wanted to. Have no idea if he wanted to come back. No clue whatsoever. But that is a good place to lead us into this conversation about the bullpen. We're not going to spend a ton of time on this because bullpens are so volatile. It is difficult to truly project how good a bullpen is going to be. But we have been using FanGraphs and Zips projections as much as possible to kind of lead, kind of steer these discussions.
Right.
And I got to tell you guys, Zips thinks the Reds bullpen is going to be a steaming pile of garbage.
Well, what do they know?
Hopefully, very little. So, after the Chapman signing, looking at these bullpens, they have the Brewers with the most wins above replacement at 4.7. Very top-heavy 4.7. What's the dude's name? Devin Williams.
Devin Williams.
They're stud. I think he's got one and a half of those, 1.4. They have – go ahead.
They've got some dudes. They have a really good bullpen. Yeah, and that's after they got, you know, made the dumb move a couple years ago to get rid of Hader.
Yeah, I still don't get that.
Remember how good that move looked for a few weeks when he got to San Diego and just vomited all over himself, and then he
remembered he was Hader, and then he started pitching.
Yeah, somebody sent him a text. Hey man, look in the mirror real quick.
Do you remember who you are?
Now he's making $19 million a year with the assholes.
Is that who he signed? Okay, I was going to ask. I knew he signed with somebody. I can't remember who
he signed with the Astros. 5 years, 95.
Yeah. So much money. Yeah, so the Brewers are going to have great bullpen, which is kind of why I was sad to see Rhys Hoskins sign with them, because they were a really pitch-heavy team, and they still are, but adding that little thump in the lineup doesn't thrill me.
No.
Finishing number two after the Chapman signings, they have Pittsburgh, the Pirates, at 4.0. They project a .6 for Chapman. So that puts them up to 4.6 wins above replacement. And I'm not going to lie to you, that 1-2 punch of Bednar and Chapman is absolutely disgusting.
But that might
whether
the Pirates have. It's the bullpen.
Whether or not they can carry leads into the through the seventh inning for those two to matter remains to be seen. But let's not all just sit back and pretend that these other teams in the Central, this is why we were beating the make a trade deadline move in 2023, because you can't expect the other teams to not be there.
And we'll I don't that expect drum again this year too.
I don't expect the Pirates to be a playoff team, but if they somehow hovered around 500 for the first half of the season, it wouldn't blow my mind. They did it for the first third of the season last year.
Right.
They've got some major league caliber talent, and they're not just rolling over, which is what we're used to in the past.
So O'Neill Cruz is back from injury.
O'Neill Cruz, the lesser Cruz.
Yes.
So they're not going to be the easy out that they were. I don't expect them to be world beaters, but that bullpen is going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Third place in projections, the St. Louis Cardinals. I would like to take this point to remind everybody that the Cardinals stink and I hate them.
Yes, they're the Tweety Birds.
Co-signed.
Yes.
That is not.
Send it. Stamped and approved. They suck.
Some hardcore analysis.
We do not like the Tweety Birds.
And they've got a decent little bullpen, too. They got some good depth, but they don't have that that top end, that shut down guy that I'm terribly scared of. Halsey's pretty good, but I'm not going to.
They don't have Alexis Diaz.
They don't have Alexis Diaz. After that, we're looking at they project the Cubs at 2.9 wins above replacement to edge out the Reds, who are 2.4. So they project the Reds to be quite a bit worse than every team in the NL Central. The Cubs, again, another team that it's not blowing my mind. Like, I don't know what they're seeing that I'm not.
They think the manager is going to make that much of a difference.
That's a fun question. Does the manager even matter that much in today's game?
We have David Bell, so no.
I've said this for years. There are five good managers, five bad managers, and 20 average. I think Council is one of the five good managers. But, again, and we talked about this on Jeff's show about football coaches, you can't take your chicken poop and make chicken soup, you know?
Yep.
You need to have talent, and the Cubs aren't terrible, but what's their they signed one player, like one useful player so far this offseason that's I don't know. I've seen people say Shota Imanaga. I'm butchering his name, and I'm completely sorry. I've seen that he's probably a number three starter. Cool. So you guys peed yourself down the stretch last year, barely finished a game ahead of the Reds. Lost a bunch of guys and signed a number three starter.
Yeah, lost Cody. Lost Cody Bellinger too. Let's not forget one of the guys they lost was one of the best players in the National League last year.
Oh, exactly. He's not that good. Come on.
He was last year.
I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. That was sarcasm.
There is a large contingent of people on my Twitter feed that would agree with you. But so let's get into the Reds a little bit. Again, don't want to spend a ton of time on this. We're running a little bit late, but they project the Reds to have it was 2.3 wins above replacement, up to 2.4 after the signing of Brent Suter, local Brent. I think that the bullpen, and I see all this through Reds color glasses. I know I do. I'm a homer.
I only got my orange ones here. I don't have my reds ones. Damn.
I'm a hopeless homer. I think that I look up and down this projected roster, and I think Diaz is a guy. I was terrified last year that he was going to be a one-year wonder. But no, he did it again. He showed that it's not just a flash in the pan. I think that Emilio Pagan, maybe they only want to throw him on the road. He gives us some fly balls. But he's a very, very good arm. Lucas Sims is a guy. I mean, I look up and down this projected roster, and I see legit Major League. Sam Moll was one of the best relief pitchers in Major League Baseball last year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brent Suter, another solid. They got a bunch of lefties. Joe, why don't you run with it for a little bit? How are you feeling about this bullpen?
I'm surprised that the bullpen, like, you look at the names that they ran out of the bullpen last year with Ian Jabeau and with Buck Farmer and that those guys pitched high leverage innings and they were successful. And you actually look behind the numbers and you look at their XFIP and FIP and the more predictive stats. And they actually they pitched relatively close. You know, their performance is relatively close to their underlying metrics. And now those guys who were pitching high leverage are now bumped down in the lineup. I had a very nice discussion with Dave Zimborski, the creator of Zips.
Did you?
No, he I called him a blank and an arrogant blank, and he didn't like that I questioned him and then totally neglected my my point that I was trying to make about Emilio Pagan. Yeah, he's an
extreme. The lesson is always totally worthwhile to argue with people on Twitter.
It is. He's an extreme fly ball pitcher, and his home run to fly ball rate was historically low. That's not something that's proven to be historically repeatable, and he's going to one of the most homer happy ballparks in the history of mankind. But the Reds have one of the biggest analytical staffs in Major League Baseball. They can look up Fangraphs and look and say, this guy gives up a ton of fly balls. Last year, or in 2022, he gave up a lot fewer, the fewest amount of fly balls he's ever thrown, and threw his splitter three times more often. Think we can figure out something there and maybe throw, you know, throw some more splitters to keep the ball out of the air a little bit more.
Well, speaking of splitters, the Reds have the guy that might have the best splitter in all of Major League Baseball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can take that ghost fork from Senga and shove it up your you know what. Fernando Cruz absolutely, I think, might be the best splitter I have ever seen. His whiff rate, and I had the Baseball Savant page up. The whiff rate on his splitter is something like 60%, which means that you throw 100 pitches, 60 times they are missing that pitch.
Yeah. He's one of the reasons that I – one of the biggest reasons I think this bullpen is going to be better than those projections. I think he is a legit – and he might not even start the season in the majors. Mm-hmm.
I think he's too good. I think he's got a decent fastball and just working. I think more just throwing strikes. I mean, he's a weird story because he didn't debut until he was 32 years old.
Yeah, he was a position player until like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, spent a decade in the minors and finally had a breakthrough and came up in late 2022. Pitched really well. In 2023, he is in the top 1% of the league in K rate, 35%. His expected batting average against top 8%. This is a guy who actually pitched worse than his underlying metrics. So he's actually a better pitcher, pitched better than what the results were. And I think, honestly, I'm not down on Diaz, but I think Cruz is actually a better bet to be a. I think he might be the best arm that they have down there, even better than Diaz.
That is a bold prediction, and I'm here for it. We haven't even talked about Nick Martinez yet. Jeff, how valuable do you think Nick Martinez is going to be to this this bullpen?
Unbelievable, because he can do anything. He can start, he can relieve, he can short relieve, long relieve, he can do whatever you want. And that's the thing that we were missing last year, is that guy. The only thing I want to ask, I wonder what Zip's prediction was of the Reds bullpen last year, because I don't think I was guarantee it wasn't very good, and our bullpen was actually pretty good last year. So now a lot of these guys had career years, you know, Jabot, Farmer, they're coming back. You know, we'll have to see if they can do it again. But like you just said, you weren't sure if Diaz could do it again, and he proved he could. That's another thing though for Diaz, we got to cut his innings down somehow, because he was done at the end of the year last year. I think he was just, his arm was about to fall off. They pitched him so much. So that's the one thing I think where Martinez would help too. And these other guys that they signed as well will help. And I think Suter, I think he, honestly, I like him. I think this is going to be a sneaky good signing there. I really, I don't know why. Hometown kid, coming back home. He looks like a kid in the candy store wearing that red uniform there. Like,
he really does, doesn't he? Yeah. I'm excited, and I love the way he pitches.
Yeah,
he throws junk, man. He gets up there, and it's location, it's slow, it slogs, it does not. That's something that Joe has pointed out before. The Reds might be lacking a power arm.
And yeah, I can see it.
Suter is definitely not
there. There isn't an arm that comes out that scares you. I'll go with you on that one. Yeah, for sure.
I have hope. So Lyon Richardson was a high round draft pick a couple years ago. He had arm injuries, whatever. He made it to the majors this year, or you know, 2023 as a starter. He's been kind of surpassed by multiple pitching prospects. Obviously Abbott and the three guys that are already up, Green, Lodolo, and Ashcraft. passed by Connor Phillips, passed by Petty. I want to see him in the bullpen. He's got a upper 90s fastball to begin with. It's going to play up even more if he's coming out of the pen. There's a chance he starts as a starter in Double A. I would love, and I even put in here in the notes, I would love for him to be transitioned into the bullpen and just come in and just blow smoke past people for an inning. It's seventh inning, sixth, whatever. Just have that different, that power arm coming out. And if he can work himself into high leverage, awesome. But I would love to see him come out of the bullpen.
That would be awesome to have a guy out of the bullpen like that. Like, you know, former Red, the Nasty Boy, Rob Dibble, his birthday was this past week. If you have somebody like that coming out where he just scares the crap out of you, I agree.
If he can chuck a ball at Doug DeSins, even better.
Dude, I remember that game. I'm like, where are you throwing the ball?
What the hell are you doing?
Like, he's like, I was throwing it to first base. Like, no, you weren't. You're throwing it at his ass.
That's like saying Roger Clemens was throwing the broken bat into the dugout and not trying to.
I was trying to throw it there.
Mike Piazza.
My bad. Like, I have no control over my pitches. Whatever.
I love it. One other little subplot for the bullpen is that they are currently carrying three lefties with a couple other guys. And
I like that.
Major League spring training invites. So keep an eye on that. A couple other guys kind of have reverse splits. So I'm not sure how they're going to utilize that, how much you can utilize that. But just to put a bow on things, I think that it is perfectly reasonable for Fangraphs to have predicted the Reds to have the worst bullpen in the NL Central. I just don't agree with it. I expect them to be somewhere more middle of the road.
I don't even care. It's you're talking from best to worst, 2.2 WAR. Like, if that actually is, you know, transitions or you know, actually translates from wins above replacement to wins, you're talking two games from the bullpen. Like, cool, fine, whatever.
Those two games would have put the Reds in the playoffs last year.
But
I'll see you down there, Jeff.
That's the thing. Like, two games, dude. That's all it was.
It wasn't two games over Pittsburgh, and Milwaukee's still coming back down to earth. So I'll take the Reds offense and starting pitching depth.
All right, boys.
Well, more than make up that dearth.
Yeah, 100%. All right. Well, I tell my wife how we haven't had an episode over an hour in several weeks, and we're at hour 102. So I think it's a good time viewer mail questions. As always, these are actual questions from actual viewers and listeners, members of our Patreon family, where you too can join the familia at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy with a Y. First question comes from Hooper Pal. My boy Hooper says, not sure if this will qualify as a rag question. I did ask for rag questions, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Thinking about going to see the Reds caravan tomorrow night here in Columbus, be tonight as you are listening to this, and I need a new belt. Where's the best place in the mall to buy a good belt? I gotta lie, I don't know when the last time I bought a belt was.
I bought one about 2 weeks ago in Walmart.
I'm digging the question, though. I'm digging the question. Come to us.
Try to think of the mall. I'm like, I don't even who goes shopping in the mall anymore?
I think you can get a perfectly cromulent belt at JCPenney.
I'm looking. He's up in Columbus, and Columbus has a really nice outdoor, like huge, huge outdoor shopping area called Easton Town Center. They've got 5-Eleven, which is one of those, they're a geared more towards like EMTs and emergency service workers and more professional working gear. Go to one of those. You know, it's going to last forever and ever. You can look like a true, like, man, you're not getting it. It's not going to cost you like $150 if you were to go to one of the boutiques or anything like that. So I don't know. I haven't been to the mall to buy clothes for myself in forever. I get my stuff from Stitch Fix. So
you can always go to the thrift store. It's like, I'm going to pop some tags. And oh, sorry.
Found the right gas station.
I got $20 in my pocket.
All right. Next question comes from Joey Gadiza. Joey, we're only going to answer your first question, but we will save your second question for next week just because of time crunch here. Joey says, of the current Reds constructed roster, who do you figure has the best taste in music? Ooh. Joe, who do you think?
I would say Votto, but he's no longer on the roster. That hurts so much to say. Yeah. It's got to be it's got to be someone on the coaching staff. It's got to be an old white dude that's, you know, comparable to my taste is what, you know.
Yeah, what is good taste, Joey? What is good taste?
You're like punk rock.
Right, Joey plays punk rock, so I mean, it's, you know, that's taste is relative. We'll say comparable taste. It'll probably have to be David Bell because he's an old white guy. So David I don't know.
All right, Jeff, what do you think?
I would say Graham Ashcraft because not to toot my own horn, but I had him on the show. Joe was on there with me, and we were talking music. So he's a good old country boy. So I like country,
then I think Graham Ashcraft's your guy.
I mean, I like everything. So, but I do like country music. So I would go with Graham.
I'm going to go a complete different direction. I am married to a wonderful Puerto Rican woman, so I think Alexis Diaz or Fernando Cruz are either of them are going to be pumping out the tunes. Like you can't hear a Latin song and not start moving.
Oh yeah,
some people don't want me to start moving, but I'm doing it anyway.
Well, I start Alexis. Moving. I start moving and things start hurting. My age, I'm so old, according to Joe.
Alexis does have Timmy Trumpet. He doesn't have I mean, his brother's got Narco. I mean, Edwin's got Narco, which is probably the most badass. I love Metallica, but I think Timmy Trumpet is even better than Mariano Rivera walking out to Enter Sandman. So, and Alexis does have a Timmy Trumpet song. So I will give it to Diaz brothers.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Next question. Well, not even a question. Just a statement from Seth Shaner, host of Red Leg Roundtable, with a very fun interview coming your way and an awesome previous interview with Eddie Taubensee. Seth says, Joe, if you promise me that Chad will bring all his Springsteen bootlegs, I will join you in the Slack music chat.
That should be more like, I'm trying to get more people into the music chat just to talk, you know, I mean, again, music that I don't listen to. Introduce me to more music. Like I'm down, but,
podcast killed the radio star. Podcast killed the radio star.
You're barking up the wrong tree here. Nate's the one who has that personal connection to Chad that can possibly get him to bring over his hidden Bruce Springsteen bootlegs. He tries to make it off like he hates them, but we
can confirm that doesn't exist. He has all the Dave Matthews Band you could ever want, though.
He's a huge fan of Glory Days and throwing that speedball by you.
Glory Day. Oh, I always got to sing. Sorry. You guys brought up good songs.
Hey, don't stop. Our next question comes from James Urban. Okay, maybe you stop. James Urban says, what's the most underrated position in baseball? Personally, I think it's the catcher. Yeah. This was interesting because when I first read this, I said, the catcher's not underrated. Everybody agrees it's the most important position in baseball. And then I thought some more about it, and I think that maybe that line of thinking has kind of gone to the wayside. So I agree with you, James. I think that catcher is the most important and also the most underrated.
Yeah, I agree. First thing, you know, that came to my head is catcher, because I mean, he not only has the controls the pitching staff, controls the defense, you know, throughout the infield and everything. You know, he's calling plays, he's blocking pitches. I mean, it kills me. I remember when I did play catcher, which, you know, 30 years ago, getting up and running down out of the crouch, getting up and running down first base to make sure, you know, if there's not an overthrow, you're there to back him up. You're the back. So he's got to do that like every freaking ground ball. He's got to get up and run.
Field general,
and then, oh yeah, then you're supposed to be able to hit too. That's why Johnny Bench is the greatest catcher ever. Just saying.
Could not agree more. There. Mm-hmm. For me, it's the designated pinch runner. We need to bring back Herb Washington.
I'm going to kick this guy off the show. He's never coming back. All right.
Herb Washington.
Last question. Last question, which is maybe my favorite question that's ever been asked on this show. Brandon Kamick asked, if you had to eliminate one Reds mascot, which one would you pick, and what is your weapon of choice? I just want it to be known. I want it to be said out loud that this is the kind of question that I want. This is the energy I want you to bring.
Oh, God.
The viewer mail questions. All right.
Brandon, I love you.
Weapon of choice.
You go first. Do we all agree on the mascot?
It's got to be Gapper.
It's got to be Gapper, right?
Gapper. I'm going with the trebuchet.
Serious
launch
accuracy.
That fur ball into the sun.
The more sophisticated catapult. I love it.
Absolutely.
Oh my God.
All right. Jeff, what's that?
All right. What's well, just to be different, I would say Mr. Redleg, because I grew up with Mr. Red, not Mr. Redleg. For him, I would take his mustache and shoot him off like a slingshot.
All right. Good answer. Good answer. I also think it's Gapper, but I think we need to give him a taste of his own medicine and death by t-shirt cannon.
Real up close.
So the Maude Flanders.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God.
All right, gentlemen. Let's call this an episode. Joe, what else is going on at the Riverfront, brother?
I need to compose myself. Anyway, this week's episode of The Bengals Show, I had Tim and his beautiful, lovely, awesome, fantastic daughter.
Oh,
Iris,
hold on. Let me pause real quick. I forgot. Tim texted a follow-up last second question.
Oh.
Two of them.
It's last second.
Tim Daniel, host of Late Night Reds. Fast food cheeseburger of choice. Double Whopper from Burger King.
What do we consider Steak and Shake a fast food?
That counts.
Oh, not when I go there, yeah. But it counts.
Steak and Shake all day long.
I'll go with a Whopper with cheese. We don't have a lot of Burger Kings. Like they've all closed. Like they don't do well. Whatever reason on the east side of Cincinnati. So
you're on the east side.
So underrated.
They don't like east siders.
We like bougie stuff that doesn't get served in a throwaway plastic. I love it. But Whopper with cheese.
Awesome. And Tim asked another question. I'm going to have to push that to next week also because my wife just texted me that dinner's ready.
He's going to get a Whopper. Right. Royale with cheese.
All right. So, Joe, what's going on with Riverfront, brother?
This week's episode of The Bengals Show, again, with Tim, good buddy Tim Daniel, and his beautiful, lovely, awesome daughter, Iris, who I think is celebrating a birthday on Friday. So when this is released, It'll be her first birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Iris.
Happy birthday. We reviewed the playoffs, previewed this the championship games coming up on Sunday, and then we power ranked their positions of need going into the 2024 season. Spoiler alert, kicker and quarterback are not highly rated on my positions of need.
What?
I think they're going to be set for those for a little bit. Riverfront Xavier show debuted. Tim spoke with former Xavier player Zach Hankins this week. Red Leg Roundup or Roundtable with the aforementioned Seth Shaner has Scott Hattieburg, which is so cool. Got him coming out this week. NBA Friday, which will be in your feed, same time as this. Drafting all-time UK Wildcat teams.
Ooh, that's fun.
As players in the NBA. So
Sam Doherty, number one. Or Sam Bowie, number one.
I was going to say, I asked him where Sam Bowie was going to be, and he actually defended Sam Bowie. So,
Well, he was good in college.
Ever the optimist.
Exactly. He's so much more optimistic. And obviously, Riverfront U, we've got... We got our beat writers that cover everything local on Riverfront U. So,
love it. A lot of good stuff going on. Jeff, thank you so much for coming on, man. Please shout out your socials. Where can people find you? Let them know about your show.
Appreciate it. Yeah, I don't have nearly as many shows as you guys do, which you guys do a great job. That's why I love having you guys on my show. But my show is Sports Strawberry Ice live every day at 5:30 Monday through Friday. Hopefully, these two will come on the show. It'll be at 4 o'clock this Monday because I'm gonna have Bronson Arroyo on. We have Corey Dillon on every Monday. So I got two shows on Monday. Corey Dillon's every Monday at 5:30. Bronson's going to be on at 4 o'clock. Tomorrow I got Dale Altman. I call him Draft Dale from Bengals and Brewers. We're going to be talking everything draft related. And, yeah, every day talking Reds, Bengals, Bearcats. I'm ready for spring training, boys. And follow me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all under Sports with Strawberry Ice.
I love it. If you're not checking out Sports with Strawberry Ice, please go do it. Fantastic show. Jeff's doing a great freaking job. Unfortunately, he has Joe on there a lot, but
yeah, that's the only problem. I got,
This is a $1 million mug right here.
Sorry. Dusted down in the ice cave. Sorry.
Thank you so much to you two animals. Thank you to everyone for listening and supporting the Riverfront. Tell your friends, tell your kids, tell your wives, tell their friends and their kids to please subscribe, like the show, do all that good stuff. We are everywhere. And once again, huge, huge, huge thanks to our supporters at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. We love ya. Come join the family. So shouts to Adam Dunn. Shout out to Lisa Alberto and Wayne Krenchicki and Eli Cash. For Jeff Trinipal, for Joe Farsing, and for Alex Blandino, this is Nate Dyson. Saying so long, Cincinnati.